Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Get ready, Ohio. FanDuel, America's number one sports book, is coming to the Buckeye State. And to kick things off, you can get started with $100 in free bets as an early sign-up bonus. Plus, when you sign up today with promo code OHIOFD, you'll be all set when FanDuel goes live in Ohio. Then you can bet on all your favorite teams in all your favorite sports with $100 in free bets. Just download FanDuel's top-rated sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Ohio, this is your chance to get in on the action. Join today with promo code OHIOFD. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 or older and present in Ohio. Bonus issued in non-withdrawable free bets that expire 7 days after FanDuel accepts its first real money sports wager in Ohio, 1-1-23. Unique user identity verification required. Offer ends on the go-live date. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're talking today and continuing down the 25 years episodes, a loving look back at the Ravens organization and some of the great moments. We're actually talking about a good one today, the Sunday night football win over the New England Patriots in 2012. Here to talk to me about it is Dirk Schwenk. Dirk, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. My transitional period of my day when I go from lawyer by day to Ravens fan at night or whatever else it is that I might do during the day. So
there you go. I'm looking into his office there. He's got all his guitars up and his whatnot. You do some singing as well?
Yeah. No, I'm a singer-songwriter. I've got a band, Dirk and the Truth. We had practice last night, which is why we punted to tonight. And I try to have a good time in life, go to some Ravens games, learn interesting things.
All right. Appreciate that. So we're talking about a game that sits at a kind of a crossroads point for the Baltimore Ravens in 2012. They, certainly had played well in the opener against Cincinnati in week two. I'm forgetting exactly what happened in week two to this team. We'll have to look at that real quickly. I think they might have been 2-0. But I'm trying to remember who they beat. No, they got beat by the Eagles 24-23. So that was a tight one up in Philly. They lost. So they came home 1-1 playing the Patriots on Sunday Night Football. Art Modell had died a couple of weeks before.
Correct. And they're wearing Modell patches on their uniforms. This was Ray Lewis's 17th and final year, which, thinking about it, is really an incredible run. I mean, you don't really think about it like Cal Ripken sort of, but his run to be able to stay, effective in the NFL as a every down middle linebacker with, 150 tackles a year probably for that period of time is just incredible. And he was still, he still looked good here. He wasn't perhaps the dominant Ray of, a few years prior, but the game had also changed a little bit, I think, from the years prior too. So he was still doing well. He told a story. I'm not sure if it was this year, but he told a story in the offseason one year that as the game, I think, was sort of going toward a more pass-oriented game. And he was like, I'm going in my offseason. I'm going to lose 10 pounds. And, I'm going to come out running 4-4.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way.
Not when you're 36 or whatever.
This is interesting because Ray, we look at today's Ravens linebackers, and one of the things that really stands out to me is how they have no idea what's going on behind them. It's as if the opponent becomes invisible as soon as they move between levels 2 and 3. They don't read the routes well off the line of scrimmage. Josh Bynes has been an exception. He's played pretty well in recent weeks. But Ray, even in his final season, one of the things he could still do was read the quarterback well, read the routes off the line of scrimmage, so he knew where he had to be in a passing lane, even if he couldn't cover at all. And really saw in the Super Bowl just how weak a coverage player he'd become. But he was still able to impact plays by getting into passing lanes.
Well, there's times, and I remember distinctly with Ray, that there'd be times he'd be 40 yards downfield in a deep drop, affecting a pass into the end zone. You know, we're just no business being a, you know, middle line. It's just not where you would expect a middle linebacker to be at any point. And he, you know, he would do that. He was very effective that way, and certainly knew every nuance of the game aside from his physical gifts. He was a fun player to watch.
Yeah, it was a great year. This was not the greatest Ray Lewis year, but no, still it was fun.
No, that's true. But it turned out good, I guess. I mean, we should hearken forward. Part of the reason to look at this year, you know, is that this is ultimately a Super Bowl team, and the early part of this year wasn't its, you know, greatest part of the season. We ultimately got, mm-hmm. you know, this was the season that Cam Cameron is fired later on, mm-hmm. because the offense can't really seem to stay, you know, out of its own way. It had a really good, at least, you know, on paper, this defense is magnificent. You know, we got Nada and Ellerby. Sizzle's injured right now, but Bernard Pollard is back there. Ed Reed, Ray's still in the game. It certainly, we had a lot of pieces in this, which is part of what I wanted to see. There's great pieces in this game and going forward.
Yeah. Ed's last year as a Raven as well, of course, his interception in the Super Bowl was really his last big moment. But Ray Lewis, I want to just mention one other thing that I don't think a lot of people really get. There are very few players who have ever gone out the way Ray Lewis did. And I'm not talking about winning the Super Bowl, because there's been other players who've done that, Jerome Bettis and, you know, players like that. But Ray Lewis, literally on his last three defensive plays in the NFL, made a significant contribution to each of the 2nd and 5, 3rd and 5, and 4th and 5 plays that ultimately gave the Ravens the Super Bowl. And on Danelle Ellerby had the game winning pressure of Kaepernick, but it was Lewis crossing the face of the left guard Iapati that gave him the lane to run. And you know, it's just he would not be cleared out of the previous play. It was 2nd and 5 or 3rd and 5. I'm trying to remember which one it was, but they ran a clear out where they ran literally three guys through one zone, ran then a running back in the zone, and Ray diagnosed it the whole way. He was on it, and Kaepernick instead went to the outside, and Jimmy Smith pretty much took somebody's head off. But anyway, Ray Lewis' contributions. I mean, Ted Williams homered in his last at bat in a completely meaningless game. It's usually thought of as one of these iconic moments in sports. You know, that, right. But Ray Lewis's final three plays, there's nothing like it in the history of any sport that I'm aware of.
I certainly will not argue with you on historical context on almost any issue having to do with the Ravens, but I do remember that being a great Super Bowl, and the fact that he sort of, and he got a lot of heat for this too, you know, at the beginning of the playoffs or whatever year, you know, whatever game it was, I forget, that he said, this is it, this is my last ride, you know, I'm going out. And you know, and he played his heart out. I feel like the defense played it, their hearts out around him too. Mm-hmm. And he got a lot of flack for that, sort of criticized for making it about himself, which I don't think it was what his, I don't think that's what Ray was doing. I think he was just trying to bring everybody's energy and his own energy up to be like, this is it.
Yeah, I agree. I think I didn't look at it as a selfish act, and I think it's kind of foolish for the people who do. But anyway, let's get back to the Sunday night game, because that's what we're here to talk about. It's a great game in and of its own, in and of itself. How do you want to tell this story?
Well, let's see. Well, I told the story last time about sort of the reason I picked, you know, a particular game or a particular season, but the only time I've been down on the field for a Ravens game, I had whatever, you know, whatever sort of those, like, you know, fan passes. Mm-hmm. I know somebody in the Ravens organization and I happened to get like the family, you know, field passes that, you know, would have gone to her friends and family. But that in that experience, I was down there on the home sideline, maybe, I don't know, 5 or 6 feet off the edge of the sideline. And it was during warmups. And so Vonte Leach, who I didn't even know, like this must have been early, it might have been the preseason of this year. I didn't even really sort of know him by number and whatever, but Vonte Leach was doing pass drills and came on a little short out pattern right at me on the sideline. And I was like, oh my God, that is the biggest like, who could that possibly be? This man is huge. And so I do remember this, you know, this period of time. And I love the Ravens for the fullbacks. I mean, we've done great with fullbacks forever. That's part of our culture. But he was just a beast. My goodness. When you see him up close in pads, you know, from field eye level, he is a monster. Well, you know, is I'm sure still was a monster in those times. So, so I love this season. I love the season partly because we're going into the, you know, we're going into a Super Bowl year, partly because there was troubles, partly because, you know, because of the people that were still on the Ravens here. But just to kind of wind it up, this was a year, you know, the Patriots were the offensively dominant team of this era. And this was a really good era for the Patriots. Brady, obviously, Gronk in the mix. And then they were super big on the sort of tiny, versatile running back slot guys. So Edelman, Woodhead, and and Welker all on this squad, all contributing. Woodhead primarily a running back for them, and Edelman, you know, and Welker going out for passes. Welker in his dominant, this was his dominant year. He was fantastic in this period. Mm-hmm. Patriots running solely, exclusively, I think, or just about no huddle through this entire game. And this was their no huddle phase, I feel like, offensively. That was their kind of innovation at the time. And the Ravens come out with, you know, we've got really great personnel. We've got Flacco at quarterback. We've got Rice in the backfield. We've got, is it Pitta? I want to say Pitta is our, yep, you know, then very good tight end, pass catching tight end. And weirdly, we come out running no huddle also. So I guess we and, you know, much of the league during that time sort of adopted this notion that running no huddle would be the kind of effective offense. So we come out to begin this game. Offensively, we come out no huddle. We defer actually on the kickoff and play defense against the best offense in the league, which I thought was kind of an interesting decision.
They pretty much always want that second half reception. You don't want to let the opposing team double dip at halftime is one of the reasons why they do it. But just to have the control over the drive pacing in the second half is more important.
Well, I certainly agree with that. Although against Brady in that offense, you wonder. But yeah, I mean, that's certainly the go-to thing. So Brady comes out. They look terrible. It's extremely loud. They don't seem to really be able to get their plays in. They fumbled on second down. Ellerby got a sack on third down, and I think that was that. So Ravens get the ball. And like I said, they come out no with Flacco, no huddle. And Flacco, obviously was a huge Flacco fan during this time. And Flacco has his gifts. And throughout this game, just, you know, on display, his arm strength in the sense of, you know, like putting, there's, you know, like no arc on a ball that goes 40 yards downfield. He just whips it in. And, you know, it's like 8 feet off the ground and it hits the receivers 40 yards downfield. So his arm strength is fully on display. But as the kind of quarterback to come out and run no huddle, I do not view Flacco's game like that. He's a very, you know, deliberate kind of quarterback.
I mean, a lot of what the Ravens did with the no huddle was trying to get to the line of scrimmage, to prevent substitution, but then also taking their time at the line of scrimmage. And it's interesting that you mention this because, you know, the Ravens are down 13-7 at halftime in the AFC Championship game later this year. And it was the no huddle that the Patriots had no answer for in terms of the Ravens getting the line of scrimmage quickly, them not being able to substitute, the Ravens just driving down the field and taking that second half 21-0.
Well, I'm going to have to go look at the rest of the season because they didn't look terrible, but they did not look great. And it just seemed like a weird, strategically just kind of strange. But so this first drive, they go no huddle. They got, Ray Rice is in this thing. He's like lined up 12 yards deep as a single back offense. And that seems to be our kind of major approach here. Runs up the middle. The thing that struck me is kind of, and we talked about this last time, historically the game, even this, 2009 game, which is the game we talked about last time, looked so different. Like unmodern football, it looked like, the 1950 Green Bay, offense essentially. This game, like I said, we're seeing some of those innovations that the Pats are putting in with, more versatile players and whatever. But I will say, so the Ravens get to, the Patriots side of the 50, fourth and one. They've been running with Ray Rice, and they've got Pitta, who's a very, very solid short pass catcher. They don't even think about going for it.
It's incredible. And this day and age, they have never punted.
And so that was kind of interesting to see. Now, this was Cook in Cook's, when Cook was a punting weapon. And I feel like maybe we've lost a little bit about, in the last few years with him. He used to hit that flutter ball and some other stuff that people just couldn't track. They couldn't catch. So he kicks it down to the 10. And so it's not the worst decision to kick it. But, Brady for 80 yards or Brady for 40 yards is kind of the same thing. You're still going to hope to stop them when they get into the red zone. And so it's just amazing to see how much that has changed. So they come back. Let's see what happens. Pats eventually get a field goal here on all the things that you might, kind of expect with, Welker on up the sideline. I will say you see Ed Reed in this drive. Now, this is the beginning of the era where they're starting to sort of be more, that protecting receivers and whatnot is more common. I don't know when they passed that sort of the unprotected receiver rule, but it was probably around this time when people were starting to pay attention to head injuries. But Ed Reed hit Edelman on this drive to stop it so hard and square. I mean, it wasn't helmet to helmet, I don't really think, but it was more like chest to head. And Edelman caught it and, jumped back up and everything. But good God, you just like a hit that you don't see in this day and age. And it would have been flagged. It was not flagged here. So they stopped him. Pats go up, kick a field goal, 3-0.
Flacco turns right around, gets intercepted immediately on the very next play from a scrimmage. Yeah.
He did have the tackle, though. I put in my notes that Flacco got the tackle. And that's not the only time. He got a number of tackles in his career, which isn't a great statistic for quarterbacks.
You don't want to lose that.
He's a big athletic guy, and he got the tackle here. I appreciate that. I'm not sure. Does Lamar have a tackle yet in his career? I know that I've seen him stick his head in there a couple times and scare me half to death. But
I'll look that up as we continue the show here. We'll have an answer for you, but I don't know. Not off the top of my head.
All right, so TD Pats, they run it in from the three. I watched that drive, and they didn't have very far to go. They ran it in, and that was that. It was probably, I don't know, it was probably Woodhead for, the TD. Is that who got it?
Brandon Bolden.
Yeah, they had a bigger back, Bolden. The Ravens go 3-and-out. I didn't even write notes down. I'm sure it was just something that was irritating and pathetic. Probably run up the middle on first down for nothing and then two incomplete passes. Patriots get the ball back, and my notes from that particular drive is that Nada was everywhere, cleaning up on the inside, cleaning up on the outside. I think he had a tackle like 18 yards downfield in that drive. And, you know, just what a huge, fast man. Speaking of Nada, which I, you know, we should still get to, this, the other, one of the other fun parts about this thing is it was the Nada in his prime versus Wilfork in his prime nose tackle battle. And both of those big cats in this game were making, you know, big plays and doing good work.
Yeah, Nada had 9 tackles in this game. And I can't even tell you how unusual it is for a defensive tackle to pile up 9 tackles. We had Kelly Gregg, who got very spoiled of the kind of productivity he would have week after week. But Nada
did he really have 9 tackles?
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's got to be among his high for his career, I would guess.
Yeah, it would be probably in the top 5. Half a sack for 3.5, 1 tackle for loss. That had to be the sack, obviously. 2 quarterback hits, one of those is the sack. But still, that's an incredible stat sheet for a defensive tackle for one game.
Yeah. He would have been, you know, it's interesting. We always played him on the nose for understandable reasons, because he was unmovable, and it was very much our defensive philosophy then, as it is to a degree now, to, you know, stop the run up between the tackles. It would have been interesting to play him every once in a while. I mean, maybe they didn't, I just don't know it. But did they ever play him at D end?
Yeah, they played him some as a 3, some as a 5. But when the Ravens had a 4-man front, and it would often be him as a 1. So that's probably what you're remembering. So more of a nose tackle type position. He lined up off ball some. I mean, you may remember that he was off ball as a linebacker, and they would use this running start method. Do you remember that?
I do not remember that.
Yes, that was scary. I'll try and get that for you. This is his 7th year, and they're done with it. In fact, they're all the cool stuff with Nada, the off ball running.
It's probably like the first 2 years.
Yeah, first 2 years, and he didn't have a snap on the offensive line, I don't believe, after 2010. He actually got hurt, and he missed his defensive start because he was running a pattern in the end zone. So otherwise, you know, they had incredible success in 08, 09, and 10 running the football with him in offensive tight end.
Fullback or extra tackle or something.
Yeah.
Well, that's all right. I'll have to go back and I'll have to find some of those things. That's so him coming down, running downhill at a quarterback sounds like a lot of fun to me. So let's see, where we go. I think we go into the half at like 13-0. Does that look right?
20-14 at the half.
I'm not quite.
But it was 13-0 after 1.
Yeah. That's the first quarter. Okay. Yeah. So 13-0 after 2 field goals and that touchdown they just got. So the things, I do have a note in here that says Belichick clearly says fuck on the main screen, like with a close up camera on this next drive, which is Bernard Pierce comes in here as a rookie, which I sort of forgot about Bernard Pierce. He was a real slick little, you know, not big. He was actually big back. He was a slick runner there and effective. He had not the burst, of course, of Ray Rice, but he was a good runner. And so he comes in here, sort of spells Ray Rice for a couple and does some nice things, gets a run for 7, I think. I've got a note in here that says Leach for first down, which maybe did you get a pass or did you get a run? Can you tell?
Vonte Leach is a run. This is interesting. If he did, it'd be one of the few times in Baltimore he had one.
He never ran that I can really think. Yeah. I mean, obviously he did, but that was not his common thing.
2 catches for 7 in this game. You mentioned Vonte Leach coming at you on the sideline, but Vonte Leach is famous for really only having 1 route he would ever run, an out route, about a 3-yard flat route.
Okay. Yeah, that's the route he ran, and my God.
It was scary. But the very first play of the Super Bowl, they ran a different route with him. And this is what 2 weeks of game planning will give you is you know, they try and figure out during their scripted plays, what can they do? And they ran Vonte Leach on like 8-yard route in the middle. He's wide open and made the catch on the first play of the Super Bowl. Yeah.
So this This drive ends with the first of the Torrey Smith TDs, and I don't know. Did we mention that he was so that it was announced at this game that his brother had died literally the morning before the game. So as it was discussed, his brother died in a car accident. I want to say like 2 o'clock in the morning before this particular game. So less than 24 hours before. And, you know, so he had said, of course, he's playing for his brother and all that kind of thing. And everybody's rooting for him, but nobody's really expecting all that much for him. But he has just a tremendous game. And this particular play, if I remember correctly, was kind of a long go route up the left sideline.
Yep.
And he does what, you know, what is the classic Torrey Smith thing, which he bends that route. He bends that route just a little toward the middle and away from the sidelines. And then the ball goes in the air and he's just explosive with the ball in the air. And so all of a sudden from a position where he's sort of, you know, he looks kind of covered, but he, you know, has a bit of a pad behind him, you know, between him and the sideline, between him and the end zone. And he just disappears away from the back and he jumps to catch the ball and didn't really have to jump that high. Because the ball just like, and he kind of hits him square in the hands. He just holds out his hands, and the defensive back is like, you know, kind of like, where did he go? And touchdown, which is what a lot of what I kind of remember. I did listen to your podcast the other day about Torrey's getting pass interference calls, and he did not get a pass interference call in this game. He did get a holding call, but that's like, that was the thing that really stood out to me with Torrey. I have never seen a receiver that was faster with the ball in the air than Torrey Smith. I've seen other really, really fast receivers, but that cat, when the ball went up, was lightning.
Yeah, he was, you know, the old statement is if you're even, you're leaving, kind of as a wide receiver. and it was never more true with Torrey. And I think you're right about the ball in the air, but what Flacco was seeing to put that ball in the air is that Flacco or that Torrey Smith is close to stacking that receiver. And when he's there, he knows Torrey Smith has got a huge advantage. And of course, that was the root of a lot of the DPI calls. Was the fact, and not holding as well, is that there really was no defense for his speed once he was in that position. A lot of defensive backs, they knew it, and they would grab on for dear life at that point and take a slightly shorter play.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't think anybody did. It would be kind of fun to hold on.
All right.
It'd be kind of fun to go back and actually watch those pass interference calls. But my recollection of sort of the way that a lot of those things went is a lot like this particular play is he would burst. He would all of a sudden be launched. If the ball came in a little underthrown, he would go back and get it, draw the penalty. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure they were grabbing and holding, you know, calls too. But a lot of times it just seems to me he would just create that pad and then have such an advantage to either go up, run further or come back in a way that the defender just could never ever handle. Mm-hmm. So he goes in there, touchdown Ravens, and yeah, it's a nice little moment.
13-7 at that point.
Yeah. Let's see, the next Patriots drive, the notes I wrote down is that there was a Gronk sighting, which I'm not sure. When did Gronk come into the league?
I think he and Hernandez were drafted, I believe, in the same draft, which I believe is the same draft as Pitta and Dixon. But I have to go back and look at that. But I will.
Did they all come in then? Wow! What a tight end draft.
Yeah,
and I know. Actually, I do remember that because that was the year they drafted two tight ends. We drafted two tight ends, and there was a lot of debate kind of going into that as to who got the better of that deal.
Yeah, so Gronkowski was a 2 in 2010, so he was probably the best value of the group. And Aaron Hernandez was a 4. He spent the most time in jail of the group. And then
committed those murders that we know of.
Yes, that's horrible, yeah. It's not even a little bit funny, but... let's maybe continue on. We could tell the story maybe at a little bit quicker pace here. I'm sorry.
All right. All right. Let's see. Okay. Pitta goes in for a TD, 14-13 on our next drive. Leach is in there. Flacco has a run. The big play on that drive was Jacoby Jones, which, you know, I think of him as kind of a returner primarily. And that's probably where he did the most damage in the season. But he was also really, really, you know, slick in the field. So he had a 41-yard catch there. New England goes to the 2-minute drill and attacked it. And let's see, they go in 20-14 at halftime. That's what I wrote down. What's the score at halftime?
20-14 is correct. And this is just a classic Brady get the ball with a minute and 47. The other team, of course, is not going to see it again because Brady can get first downs pretty much at will. They drive 9 plays, 81 yards. I mean, it bothered me. Everything about that bothers me, that they easily can drive 81 yards in 107 seconds. That bothers me. It bothers me that Brady can do it every time. And if they win the toss, they'd have the ball again at the beginning of the third quarter, and they'd be looking to stack points, and it would be that much more upsetting. But Manning and Brady both, ugh, the end of the half was just never a good time against the Ravens.
No. I mean, I think the Ravens handled them as well as most teams, and maybe better than a lot of teams. But yeah, just so frustrating. And they seem to continuously evolve in that era where they just got better and better. No matter what the defenses kind of did to manage them, they just dealt with it, you know, whether it was running or passing.
The Ravens had still, if I recall correctly, never beaten the Patriots during the regular season at this point prior to this game. They'd beaten them in the playoffs in 2009, but I believe they'd lost every single regular season meeting. So it might have been 5 or 6 times they'd met prior to that.
Ugh. I did not like that feeling. I didn't remember that specifically, but I didn't like it either. What do we got here?
Third quarter, Ray Rice touchdown.
Yeah. Yeah, Ray Rice, Vontae Leach playing in here, doing good things. Torrey Smith for another 12. Smith for 32. We go 80 yards in 3.5 minutes, and we get the TD. Was it Ray Rice on the TD there?
Ray Rice for a 7-yard TD, and it's 21-20.
They come right back. It's Woodhead and Edelman and Welker's show. Brandon Lloyd is in there. Pollard gets a personal foul, as he is wont to do.
Yeah.
And Patriots score another touchdown. Ravens punt.
One of the things about this game kind of reminds you of Jackson and Mahomes in terms of very long drives being exchanged. I mean, these are like each team's taking a big windup uppercut at the other and having their way with them offensively.
Yeah, and yeah, the Ravens are doing things here. I mean, they've got real talent here, but they're a little more sort of stop and start, a little harder to watch, much less smooth than the Patriots are in this period. Jimmy Smith makes a showing on defense. I didn't actually recall that he was on this team, but I think that was his rookie year. Lardarius Webb is in his good period. Mm-hmm. Pats are up by 9 as we start the fourth quarter. I got a note here that says the Ravens on 4th and 3 with McKinney as an extra lineman and Leach as a fullback somehow managed to get stuffed on 4th and 3, which I did not like.
Is it 4th and 1 maybe? This is like 10:56 to go in the game.
Yeah, it could have been 4th and 1. Okay. I mean, I wasn't looking at the game book and I was just looking at the field, so it may, you know, who knows.
Okay.
Sure. But I remember that. I did not like that.
So McKinney, the defensive lineman, was on the field as an offensive lineman on that play?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I guess they were doing this, you know, they were doing that with him. I didn't recall that.
No, I didn't either.
But there he was. We make the Pats punt. Jimmy Smith stuffs a bubble screen, which was big. You know, that was big fun back then, bubble screens. Mm-hmm. Ellerby's playing good here. Yonda on the next drive picks up his second penalty of the game, which I recall, I don't recall getting him getting a lot of penalties. He never did. Mm-hmm. And then they show, particularly that second penalty, they show the replay, and it was the most phantom hold I think I've ever seen.
And the fans also go into a chant at that point that was extremely audible on TV.
Yes, it was extremely audible. They even commented on it. It was, as they described it, the loudest, what did they say? I might even put a note down here on that. But yeah, it was extremely odd. I mean, it seemed like everybody on the field was yelling about that. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody in the stadium, you could hear it clearly on the broadcast. So we drive down here. We've got Torrey Smith for 16, and we got Jacoby Jones for 21. We got a Ray Rice for 27. All, you know, nice things going on. Mm-hmm. Smith gets his second TD here, diving right side of the end zone. And I got a note here. I don't know if this is for the full game or if this is by this point. His six catches, 127 yards, and two TDs, which again, you know, for this game when he's, I'm sure, been up all night and, you know, is suffering, is an amazing stat line. The other thing that I noted here, and I remember thinking about that this year. So Flacco, I feel like Flacco worked with a different quarterback coach coming into 2012. And one of the things they were working on was sort of movement and shuffling and sliding in the pocket and not being such a statue. And I actually noticed, it was noticeable here in this game that Flacco's subtle movement, you know, just to get away from the rush a little bit, you know, six feet here and there, just subtle movement and then getting the ball off clean was evident. This was a good year for Flacco. I mean, this was the January Joe year later. Less obvious that he was going to be that good at this point, but he really does look good here. So now it's 30-28. Pats are still up.
Ravens needed a stop badly.
This is where I wrote it down. So that the earlier penalty was terrible, but this is the one that was the worst, the loudest manure chant I've ever heard per the broadcast. So Lardarius Webb picks off Brady, and they call a penalty for illegal contact, and you can see it didn't look like anything in sort of live play. But on the replay, you can absolutely see that the call is utter shit. It's garbage. Mm-hmm. There's no illegal contact. Everybody's just running free. It's a bad pass, and Lardarius Webb picks it off. And the fans rightfully go crazy. So we lose that pick. Still good, you know, but defense does their thing. Eventually, we get we get a punt, and JJ drops it, but recovers it. So we get the ball back, and then we push it down the field. I think, let's see what we got. 2:01. We got about 2 minutes. We must be just under the 2 minute warning when we get mm-hmm. the ball back. And JJ gets 22, Pitta for 3, Pitta for 17, JJ pass interference for 27. Which is pretty good. And this was one of the moments. So they're going to run Tucker on. So we're now at the end. We got 2 seconds left. They let it run down. They could have clawed. They had a timeout, so they could have stopped it at 7 or 8, I think. And so the broadcast team is like, they're watching this. The time's running down. They're like, you should take the timeout. And they talk about, you know, they've got this rookie kicker, you know, rookie free agent kicker, Tucker. They're like, oh, you know, can he make a clutch kick? And the broadcast team is like, oh, he should have taken the timeout with, you know, 9 seconds just in case something bad happened here. You know, who knows? But they take it down. New England takes a timeout to ice Tucker. Mm-hmm. And in point of fact, he just squeaked it in. That kick goes
over the upright.
Oh, I mean, definitely not inside the upright. Over the upright, called good, and I'm sure it was. I mean, the ref was sitting right underneath it. So that was the big finish. Tucker with one of his very first clutch kicks. Very way too close. Not Tucker-esque right down the middle, but good enough to close it out 31-29 or 28 or whatever it was. Felt good. It was good. If that was the first, you know, regular season win over the Patriots, you know, all the better. And, you know, we'd seen them in the AFC championship the year before, and we're going to see them again, I think, coming up. So,
yeah, very similar game in that AFC championship game. They were down 13-7 at Foxborough. By the way, Belichick and Brady at that point were 68-0 when leading at halftime at home. They'd never been beaten. And, you know, this wasn't the biggest lead they had, obviously, at 6 points. But, they had no answer for the Baltimore Ravens in the second half and the Ravens no huddle specifically. They drove right down the field. They coughed the ball up on offense. It was just a thing of beauty, I could tell you, to be there for that second half.
Well, I did not know that, but I certainly do recall the Patriots were the absolutely baddest team in the NFL, and it was not close, particularly on offense. They weren't necessarily going to intimidate you on defense, but mm-hmm. on offense they were legitimately unstoppable. And we stopped them just enough here, which was nice. It felt good. To watch it again. Fired me up.
Yeah, big. Certainly, it was a game of key defensive stands there at the end for this Ravens team, and exciting precursor. I love talking about this with you, Dirk, and it brings up all kinds of good memories about that Super Bowl team. Because my first memory about that Super Bowl team is that of the first five Harbaugh years, I think it was probably the worst team. All the other ones were better. The 08 team was better. The 09 team was great, even though there were 9-7. Yeah, I think the 2012 team was the worst. The 10 and 11 teams were outstanding. But the 12 team was really not that good. And the defense had sagged off. They had huge number of injuries. Left out Darius Webb and Ray at the end of his career. And honestly, Reed at the end of his career as well. It was just the team defensively was not the same team that they had been the previous 4 years. Offensively, they were better, but still, I didn't think good enough to make up for the losses on offense. And then they rode the Lewis and Flacco wave through that playoff to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. I mean, so it's interesting you have a much better historical perspective. I'm very much I have a fan level perspective. I watched all these games and, kind of think what I think, and then I rewatch them and here we are. Nada here was a force. And so defensively, I'm sure we were down, from what we had been. But offensively, I'll tell you what, this might have been the fastest team offensively in the skill positions. This might have been the fastest team, certainly in this era. Mm-hmm. Ray Rice was really good. Bernard Pierce looked really good here as a sort of second back. Anquan Boldin is in here. I didn't mention him. He did have some plays here. But, that's the only – he's not fast, but that's the only time we've really had that post-up, receiver ever. And when we got around later on in the season to kind of where Flacco seemed to trust him, like he trusted Torrey Smith in this game, to, just put it on his hands and let him deal with it, he was a real, real force. So offensively – and, we never thought about offense at all in this era. Offense was always like, I hope he can score 9 points. But offensively, this team had weapons.
Yeah, they did. And Ray Rice was a good player. This was really – he was on the way down in 2012. Unfortunately, it was kind of the end of the era for him. And I guess he played in 13, didn't play particularly well. And then the offseason troubles happened before 14 and the Ravens released him. But, there are a lot of players, on this team. It's not like we didn't love – the fact that Nada was there, that Suggs was there, that's another player who's missing for half a season here, is Terrell Suggs. Yeah. He didn't play in this game, and he came back very fast from that off-season Achilles injury playing basketball. Incredibly, came back to play, and, he was around in the Super Bowl and whatnot, but he was a shell of who he had been in other years. So, it's not that I didn't love the playoff run in 2012. I did, of course. It's just that this team was the 2018, the 2009 team, the 2011 team, they were all so close to winning it all, and they didn't get it done. People say they were early, whatever. This 2012 team, they had no business being there. No business at all.
That's probably true. What was the year? What's the year of? I think we talked about this last time. But what was the year that the kick, the Cundiff kick? What year was that? Was that the year before?
That was 11. 2011? Yeah.
Yeah. So that team. I will go to my grave thinking that team should have gone to the Super Bowl. And I think it's clear that whoever came out of the AFC was going to win.
Yep.
So they should have gone and should have won in that year. But, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Speaking of things that I don't think, I have real grave doubts about that I should never talk about, this Super Bowl and the power going out gives me pause. maybe we'll get to that.
You're a conspiracy theorist.
So I know. I'm not all about the conspiracy theories, but I just have these little suspicious bits. And the Cundiff ball is one of them. And the power going out of the Superdome while we led by whatever it was, 21 points, seems like another.
The Deflategate game, you know, coming right before the Deflategate was exposed. I mean, there's I think that every team can make a list of 20 such things. You put the right fans together, it's happened to them in their history. So I think you might feel better looking at other people's lists. Like the Detroit Lions may say, well, the penalty that wasn't called on for delay of game right before Justin Tucker's 66-yard field goal. So, you know, every team has got this.
That's true. And whatever that was, like the Green Bay, you know, wide receiver that got completely wiped out 2 years ago and was uncalled, you know, was pretty horrible too. But this is the Ravens, Ken.
Damn it.
And I only care about this team.
All right. Well, fair enough. Dirk, just a pleasure to talk football with you in general and about this game in particular. Great trip down memory lane. Where can people talk football with you?
They can talk football with me if they know me in real life. I always talk football. They can also find me on Twitter at Dirk Schwenk. I talk a lot of things, less about football there and more about sort of the issues of the day and legal issues and whatnot. But yeah, I'm always happy to talk football. And I hope at least mostly able to distinguish between issues of the day and football and talk happily about either one, depending on what anybody wants to talk about.
All right. Terrific. Other folks out there, we have about 10 more of these 25 years pods to do. Doing a bunch today. I'm just loving this day so far. And if you want to do it, send me a couple of notes on what you want. Direct messages are open on Twitter. I'll get back to you very quickly. We'll massage that into a nice episode. Dirk, fantastic job here. Great trip down memory lane. Thanks for joining me again.
All right. Talk soon.
And we'll talk to you next time. Talk to you next time on Film Study.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.